all sick people and their loved ones. In the interest of saving time and avoiding a lot of boring chit-chat later, I'm Dr. Gregory House. You can call me Greg. I'm one of three doctors staffing this clinic this morning. This ray of sunshine is Dr. Lisa Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy runs this whole hospital, so unfortunately she's much too busy to deal with you. I am a board certified diagnostician with a double specialty of infectious disease and nephrology. I'm also the only doctor currently employed at this clinic who's forced to be here against his will. But not to worry, because for most of you, this job could be done by a monkey with a bottle of Motrin. Speaking of which, if you're particularly annoying, you may see me reach for this. This is Vicodin. It's mine. You can't have any. And no, I do not have a pain management problem. I have a pain problem. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm too stoned to tell. So, who wants me? And who would rather wait for one of the other two guys? Okay, well, I'll be in exam room one if you change your mind.
This is the OGTX Prepper Survivalist Show, and I'm your host, Camel Keith. We want to welcome all of you for joining us here tonight. If you're a fan of the show and you want to get in touch with us, here's how to do that. Go to speakpipe.com/OGTX and send us a message in your own voice, in your own words. You may make it on the show. You can also email us at shtf@offgridtx.com. Look us up on all the social media outlets and connect with us that way as well. If your favorite podcast player has the option to follow and like, please hit those buttons. If you're a fan of the show and would like to help support the show, consider becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/OGTX. For as low as $1 a month, you can show your support and help us grow. Hi, Prepper brothers and sisters. Welcome to the OGTX Bunker, a Prepper Survivalist show. Thank you all for joining us tonight. I'm your host, Camel Keith, joined by my co-host, Rhonda Triggs. We got a great show for you tonight. Tonight, we'll be talking about survival herbs. This is such an important topic for all Prepper Survivalists and one of those survival topics that I know very little bit about. Fortunately for me and for y'all too, Rhonda just happens to be an amateur herbalist with a passion for off-grid apothecary studies, and she's one hell of a researcher, so I think we're in for a pretty good show. So that being said, I think I'm going to task her with some common ailments that we preppers may experience during an SHTF event. Now, some of these human afflictions, they may be serious, life-threatening illnesses that could really change the outcome of an SHTF situation, while others may be conditions that, you know, tend to make us cranky or moody or just pissed off, none of which are helpful in a stress-filled, teotwalky, no-rule-of-law type of environment. So I'm going to put Rhonda through the test tonight and hope that she pulls through for us with some simple, basic herbal remedies that all prepper survivalists can produce on their own by growing or gathering these herbs. We'll also be playing some messages from our listeners sent to us on speakpipe.com/OGTX and doing a little Q&A. Those of you who want to record a voice message to us or to your fellow listeners can do so at speakpipe.com/OGTX. It's easy to do. No sign up, no sign in. Your choice to be 100% anonymous or not. Your choice whether to be played on the show or not. Let the Prepper Survivalist world know what's on your mind. Ask any prepper question, tell any prepper story. Rant, rave, review, completely up to you. Speakpipe.com/OGTX. Our first message tonight comes direct from the great state of Anonymous USA. This is Zach. Have a listen.
Hey, Keith and Rhonda. Zach here. One thing I've noticed that we haven't spoken of with our kits is a notepad and paper so you can write things down, and another place to get supplies that we haven't mentioned is go to your local military surplus store. They have a wealth of knowledge and different pamphlets with government issue stuff, and it's a great place to start if you don't know what you're looking for.
Zach, thank you so much for reaching out to us and contributing to the show. The topics you bring to the table tonight are are exactly what we asked for. No one has ever asked about notepads or writing tools, and to be honest, even though we speak all the time about writing down notes and keeping preparedness binders and things like that in our kits, I've never considered the actual tools themselves. So it got me thinking. And when I start thinking, I start researching. And I found some really interesting ways to look at this topic. By the way, none of which I would have found had you never asked. Demonstrating that no question is too small or too big when reaching out to the show. So when it comes to prepping and survival, first thing that comes to the mind of a prepper survivalist is our gear, our kit, our tools of the trade, so to speak. Fire starters, storable food, shelter, water, purification, bug out bags, weapons, at least weapons for me. We always consider the rules of 3 minutes without air, 3 minutes without shelter, 3 days without drinkable water, 3 weeks without food. We build our supplies and gear, our training, all within the mindset of satisfying these 4 rules of 3. Of course, there are always subsets to every list of required items for any given project, our project being survival, our path being preparedness. We prep to survive, to live, and thrive. When we are prepping for a project, most of the time we're making lists, checklists, writing things down on paper or in a notebook or to be put in a binder. We preach this all the time on this show. We're always saying to make lists, create maps, build preparedness binders. Some folks like to handwrite their lists, while others do their work on a PC and print them out. Either way, we must get our thoughts, our plans, our goals, contacts, inventory, checklists, all down on paper of some sort. If we store this information exclusively in digital form, say on our computers or smartphones, we run a high probability of losing this information to the ether, okay, never to be seen again. This life-saving information that you as a prepper have compiled must be put on hard copy, written or printed out. And this is where the subsets of list of required items comes into play. Confused? Don't be. Here's an example. A flashlight does not fit in the rules of three. Nowhere in the rules of three does it say that we can't survive without illumination. Do the rules of three only pertain to daylight hours? No. A flashlight is a force multiplier. It is a tool or item that makes doing a task easier, safer, better, more effectively, more efficiently. Our checklists are force multipliers. Think of them that way. Our writing tools, paper, binders, that sort of thing, can be considered force multipliers as well. The information we put on these lists is important, and it must be protected and preserved to make it through SHGF unscathed. Loose paper is not an option, so the first thing we reach for is a notebook or a notepad. For most of us, that's a spiral type. They come in side spiral and top spiral. You've seen them where they flip up. Good choice. The spiral metal bindings and the hardstock laminated paper on the covers, they protect the sheets of paper within. These are what I use. I put them in a more protective 3-ring binder when I'm finished. You can get these types of notebooks with lots of different cover materials like they got paper, canvas, PVC, or plastic. Some have cloth or felt. I've seen imitation wood, cowhide, leather, even acrylic. Pro tip, 2-gallon Ziploc bags are great for storing your notebooks and binders to protect them from the elements. The next best option to a standard notebook would be a weatherproof notebook. Now imagine if your preparedness notebooks were waterproof, weatherproof. How about terror-proof, even indestructible? Believe it or not, they do exist. Several manufacturers are producing these gems, and you can get them online for very reasonable prices. All of them are waterproof and weatherproof. Weatherproof meaning dust, cold, heat, that sort of thing. Some have paper that can be torn, while others have tear-proof paper. Some even claim to be virtually indestructible. Look for brand names like Right in the Rain. That's R-I-T, Right in the Rain. Elon Publishing or Ellen Publishing, I don't know how to pronounce that, and then Glorifier. Standard everyday pens, markers, and pencils work on all of these products. Now, Write in the Rain also offers pens and pencils that survive the elements as well. And if that doesn't get you excited, this will. Write in the Rain also has all-weather, weatherproof, standard-size copier paper that you can print your list on straight from your PC. Then put them in your prepper binders. A ream of 200 sheets will run you about $35. That's 200 sheets of weatherproof, waterproof paper. So I'll be ordering some of that pretty soon. Now, for those of you who refuse to give up your electronics, even during SHTF, you have options too. Invest in a Panasonic Toughbook. This is a rugged, drop-proof, weatherproof, waterproof, dustproof, zombie-proof laptop that's used by the military. It's been used by law enforcement and outdoor trades like construction. Of course, you're still not going to connect to the internet in an off-grid situation, but you can still have access to everything else saved on it. As long as you have access to electricity to charge them up, you'll be fine. The basic models start at around $2,500. They are expensive. The really nice ones are $35, $38, $4,000, even $5,000. Zach, we want to thank you for getting us to think outside the box when it comes to our notebooks and logs. We don't have time today to get to your other topic, which is military surplus stores, but we do have that one on our list of show topics for this year. So keep listening. Reach out to us anytime, Zach, and thanks again for taking part in the show. Our next message tonight also comes direct from the great state of Anonymous USA. This is Clay.
Hey, guys. This is Clay. Just new to the prepping. Just got your podcast, and looks like this might be episode 45 I'm listening to. But my question is, exactly what would you put in a get-home bag and a bug-out bag? What necessarily is the difference of what you pack in them? Heard you haven't had many on SpeakPipe, so here we go. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Every time we hear of a new prepper and a new listener, we get really excited. A world full of preppers is always going to be a better world to live in. And Clay is proof that our prepper survivalist community is growing and thriving. Clay, thank you so much for reaching out to us and being a contributor to the show. You mentioned not having many listeners on SpeakPipe, and that was the case back around episode 45, which is where you're at now, and still is here at episode 86. The messages coming from our listeners these days on SpeakPipe are few and far between, though I'm not sure I understand exactly why, because we have, you know, thousands of listeners all over the U.S., Canada, South America, scattered throughout Europe, Asia, New Zealand, even Australia. Got listeners everywhere. So I'm not really sure why we're not getting a lot of SpeakPipe. I think that, you know, we prepper survivalists are hard nuts to crack, okay? But crack us, we will. In fact, I would like to invite every one of you guys and gals that have already used speakpipe.com/OGTX to message us, okay? That is, those of you who have messaged us in the past, to message us again so that you can tell all of our other listeners who may be on the fence about calling in just how easy and safe it was to contact us. Tell everyone how we never email blasted you or email spammed you guys after you used a SpeakPipe. I think that's probably what people are thinking about. They may think that there's a cost or hidden something. It's not, okay? We never, ever, ever do that. Okay, I would love to have you guys tell everyone listening the truth about using SpeakPipe to contact the show. Now, that would be awesome. Now, to Clay's message about bug-out bags and get-home bags, let's cover that now with a condensed, super simple explanation of their differences. The difference between a bug-out bag and a get-home bag is all about the workload, the task at hand. The scope of the work for each of these kits is very different. A bug-out bag is used for bugging out. Okay, which is a sometimes temporary, sometimes permanent evacuation from your current location. Now, this is almost always going to be your home base. We must assume that when we bug out, that there's a very real chance that we may not be returning anytime soon or never again. Therefore, bug out bags are generally a lot larger than get home bags. You'll need to store and carry more items in it to survive a much longer period. I consider a 72-hour kit to be a sufficient bug-out bag for me, because in my 72-hour kit, I carry enough food, medicinals, hygiene products to get me through 3 days of off-grid survival and 6 days with proper rationing. I also carry enough rules of three items to survive indefinitely. And you combine all that with a myriad of other survival gear, and I'm loaded for success. So I consider a 72-hour bag just fine as my bug-out bag. My don't look backpack. So moving on, a get home bag is basically a mission bag. This is your kit that is designed to carry mission specific items and gear to successfully complete a mission. That mission being getting home. Okay, you get that? So getting home from where? Well, that's what everyone must decide for themselves when you're building your kit. Now, that could be getting home from work, You know, if you got a long commute, it could be getting home from school or family in a neighboring state, or it could be getting home from across country. The key here is getting home. That's the mission. Because home is your base of operation. Home is where your loved ones are. It's where your bulk of your preps are located. Home is safety and security. Home is the good place. So Clay also asked about specifically what to put in a bug out bag as opposed to a get home bag. So as far as that goes, we're not going to be able to get to that on the show today. You can go back and listen to our extremely old episode, episode 3. Can you imagine that? Episode 3. We did a show about bug out bags. It was called To Bob or Not to Bob. You can get lots of ideas from that episode. But you know what? If you're patient, you're going to hear another episode coming up pretty soon because we've got a brand new bug out bag episode coming this year. Zach, thank you so much for messaging us, reaching out to us, being a contributor to the show. Zach and Clay, don't be strangers. Keep in touch. Reach out to us any prepper time for any prepper reason. The more you contribute to the show, the better preppers we will all be. Guys, please use speakpipe.com/OGTX to reach out to us. If you do choose to include your email, we will notify you via email to let you know when your message will air on the show. Some folks were asking us about when they would hear themselves on the show. Well, that's how we'll be doing it going forward. This is not a sales pitch. We're not going to email blast you. We're not going to put anything in there to buy anything. It's just going to be a simple email written by me or Rhonda telling you what episode you'll be on. That's it. A one-sentence email. Very, very simple. Speakpipe.com/OGTX. Tonight's show is all about the Prepper Survivalist Apothecary and some simple, basic herbal remedies that we, as preppers, can produce on our own to help us manage our pesty ailments email. So let's get to it. Preppers, survivalists, off-gridders, homesteaders, and all of the like-minded folks listening tonight from every corner of the globe. Regardless of what you may call yourself, we are all preppers. You may be new to prepping or you may be a seasoned pro, but the one constant that ties us all together are these feelings of unrest we have about the world around us. Wars between nations over power, religious beliefs, economics, and ideologies, infighting within our own governments, fractures developing between our own countrymen, and an uncertain future for all mankind. Prepping is not a new mindset. In fact, until recent modern times, prepping was the only mindset. You either prepped or you didn't survive. The elite class, along with the governments they control, are preppers. They have been and always will be prepped. Are you? The OGTX team believes in a world where all people are preppers. All people live without fear, without the shackles of government control. A world where we separate ourselves from the herd and become self-sustaining, self-sufficient, self-controlling thinkers and doers and actioneers of our own destiny. Becoming a better, more efficient prepper survivalist isn't easy. We sometimes turn left when we should have turned right, but that's okay. It's all part of the prepper journey. OGTX is here to help. Please visit our totally redesigned website and let us help you take your prepping to the next level. We've partnered up with some of the biggest names in our industry like Legacy Foods, BioLite, EcoFlow, and Light My Fire. And to top it all off, our own line of fully loaded 72-hour survival kits. We've done all the hard work for you. You just pick the kit that fits your needs and you're done. You're at the ready for SHTF when it comes. Our OGTX 72-hour survival kits are filled to the brim with everything a survivalist needs to combat SHTF and help keep you alive and well for months on end. Visit us at offgridtx.com. This is the OGTX Bunker, a prepper survivalist show. I'm your host, Camel Keith. Message us at speakpipe.com/OGTX. Email us at shtf@offgridtx.com. Visit us at OGTXBunker.com. My prepper brothers and sisters, let's get to the show. Rhonda, what are we doing tonight?
Oh, we had a member of the OGTX Bunker Facebook group inquire about herbal remedies. And I know there's been other people asking for this too, so we decided to put together an episode to talk about various different remedies that could replace modern medicine. You know, not everybody's real happy with modern medicine right now, especially because of the vaccinations.
No, but pretty much everybody's medicated in some way, shape, or form, especially as you get older.
This is true, but maybe we can find some alternatives to some of that.
I would love to, because honestly, when it comes to an SHTF situation, especially a long-term SHTF situation, that's one of the things that worries me. You know, I get a little bit panicky about medical stuff. Like let's say you got like a toothache, you know, who's ever had a really bad toothache for days, right? Or let's say you actually do have a serious illness like high blood pressure or something like that. I mean, these things kind of freak me out, especially as I get older and, you know, your body starts coming up with different ailments and you got to use medicines to manage them. So yeah, for me, medicinals, that to me is a little scary.
Well, I don't know if I would even call myself an amateur herbalist, but it is definitely an interest of mine, and I'm trying to learn it. So I'm going to share with everyone the research that I've done.
Well, I called you that earlier because every single time I say I have something, you have some sort of plant or oil or remedy or something. You know, it's like my elbow hurts. Oh, okay. I just looked in the cabinet and I got Schwarzweiger's salted pepper juice. And this is this, if you put this right on top of your elbow in about 3 hours, it's going to feel better. I'm like, what the? No, it's not. And then all of a sudden my elbow feels better.
I'm going to have to provide a link to that because everyone's going to want to know what it is.
I just made it up. But seriously, I mean, every single time you're like, oh, there's something for that. Oh, okay. So yeah, you are an amateur herbalist.
It's also helpful to have a daughter in the veterinary business that gives me some tips on animal treatments.
You know what? A lot of that stuff for animals works for humans too.
It does. So, well, my resources are, I try to choose resources that I believe are trusted. So some of them are the National Library of Medicine. Dr. Axe is awesome. The Mayo Clinic, some medicinal journals. And there's also a couple of well-known doctors and nurses in the prepper community that I like to check out. I read their blogs and stuff. So I feel like I'm using reputable sources, but I still believe everyone should do their own research. You definitely need to think about dosages, interactions, reactions, side effects, all of that stuff. It still applies to all the herbal treatments and homeopathic remedies.
Sure, because, I mean, you could be taking an herbal supplement that may counteract your actual medicine.
That's true. And there's also side effects and adverse reactions and things like that that you need to look into if you're going to start trying some of the homeopathic methods. So what I'm going to do is name off some of the potential remedies for different ailments, and it's going to be up to the listener to go check it out for themselves. You're probably not going to be surprised, actually, that there's a couple of things that fit in almost every ailment that we mentioned tonight.
Cool.
Let's talk about first aid stuff first. So why don't you throw out some things related to first aid, and I'll let you know what I found.
Okay, so when most people think of first aid, they think of cuts, scratches, things like that.
Why don't you think about your first aid kit and what's in there? Let's talk about some herbal remedies that are alternatives to what's in your first aid kit, maybe.
All right. So when I think of a first aid kit, one of the first things I know is in there is going to be like aspirin or something for a headache. Maybe ibuprofen, but I don't know if all first aid kits carry that. But just like your basic standard headache.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most common things that people are looking for a solution for, actually, because there's all different types of headaches. You know, you and I always do the pressure point stuff and the cold packs. And that should be something that everybody tries.
Well, because I suffer from sinus headaches, which are terrible, and you sometimes get migraines. So the cold packs and the heat packs really help.
Yeah, and the pressure points are amazing, and you should definitely look that up and find the pressure points for the different types of headaches because they work.
I'm telling you, they absolutely work. When you find that those two spots on the top of my head when I got a really bad headache and you start rubbing them, and almost instantly that shit goes away.
And it's just like a, you know, barely press on it in a tiny little circle motion.
Yeah, exactly. It really works.
And hydration is important for headaches too. You may think you're hydrated, but when you have a headache, you need to get some more liquid in you, non-caffeinated liquid.
Well, hydration is always good, but I didn't know that it could help a headache.
It definitely can. But here's, as far as the herbal things, here's what I found. And I didn't know this one. You can chew basil leaves to relieve a standard headache. So we need to get some, actually, I think we have some basil leaves. I might try that next time.
I bought some organic basil leaves not too long ago. Now, can these be dried? So if you can store them?
Yes, but it's probably not going to taste good. But you can also make a tea out of it. So there's some hot teas that will help with headaches. Mint is another herb, chamomile, catnip, believe it or not, and fennel. And you can actually combine some of these together in a tea. But like I said, do your research, because if you're already taking medications, you definitely don't want any interactions happening.
Yeah, and we don't want to have to say that for every single thing we go over tonight. So guys, straight up blanket statement across the board, do your own research. We are not doctors. We are not telling you to use anything. Be very careful.
Yeah, these are suggestions on what to research. So we talked about what you could chew and what you can drink in a tea, but there's also things you can inhale, like infused water or steam, and that would be lavender and rosemary, which are both awesome in my opinion.
I didn't know about rosemary. Lavender I know about.
It's very soothing for a headache, and lavender also works for helping you sleep. And here's the best one. This is one that I want to try when we get out in the woods. I haven't tried it yet. The ancient Greeks actually would chew on willow bark. You've probably heard that before, to relieve pain. You know, if you want to save your teeth and not chew on the bark, you can make tea out of that also.
Obviously, willow bark, that's something you'd have to find. But these other ones that you mentioned so far, you can actually grow.
You can grow them. You can get them at the store. Probably better to grow them. That way you know that it's all natural. Okay, so that's what I had for just the standard headaches. Migraines is further in a different section.
Okay, we'll talk about migraines later. So what about, okay, here's my big one. We've already talked about it. Toothache. Okay, because honestly, I've had toothaches that have floored me. I mean, you can't sleep for hours. You're in such a bad mood. Your head is pounding all over the place. It's horrible.
Well, toothaches can have a topical solution and, you know, things that you can take. So I'm just going to talk about both of those right here. The best thing that I found repeatedly over and over for a toothache is cinnamon and honey. So you mix your cinnamon. You mix about a teaspoon of cinnamon into about 5 teaspoons of honey in a little container. Rub that onto the affected tooth 2 or 3 times a day. It's supposed to make the pain go away. Plus, it's antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal. Cinnamon and honey are both antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal.
Nice. That's awesome. And I bet you it tastes good, too.
I bet it does. One thing to keep in mind, though, is there's different types of cinnamon. And I'm going to mention this right now because...
Wait, really? There's different types of cinnamon?
There is. And cinnamon is going to be mentioned all through this episode. So I want to throw this out there right now. There's 2 different kinds. There's cassia, may not be pronouncing that correctly, and Cylon, which I think is from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. Frack that.
So cassia is the most common one. It's cheaper. It's lower quality. It has a stronger flavor. But it has something in it called coumarin, which can be toxic in large quantities. So if you're going to be using cinnamon as a medical remedy, I would get the higher quality one. If you do use the lower quality one, just remember, don't take a lot of it.
And you can get this in your normal cinnamon form. You don't have to grow it.
They're both available in the grocery store. Cinnamon's actually made from the bark of a tree.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the cinnamon sticks, that's not from a little plant?
That's bark. It's bark rolled up.
I thought that was like the stems of a little plant.
It's actually curled up bark, rolled up shavings, I guess.
I would assume this is something that's probably pretty hard to grow yourself if you had like a homestead or something.
I have never looked into growing it. It would be cool to grow it. So anyway, Cylon cinnamon is more expensive. It's a higher quality. It actually has a better flavor too. It's sweeter and milder. It's really good for desserts. So in my head, I'm thinking... You remember those toothpicks? The really strong toothpicks?
I'm going to tell you something. When I was younger, and I want to say probably 8th, 9th grade, we would go into the house and we would get my parents' toothpicks and we would get cinnamon and some hot water and we would soak them. We would make this concoction and we would soak toothpicks in them and then we'd chew on those things all day. I don't know why we thought that was cool.
Oh, they used to sell the ones that were soaked in oil that would actually burn your mouth. I think that's probably the cassia, the stronger one.
So do you know if cassia or Cylon, are these tree names or are these brand names?
They're not brands. They're related to the species of trees that they come from. One has a very high percentage of cinnamaldehyde, which is the flavor, the oil, you know, it's the active part of it. Cassia has 95% of its oil is cinnamaldehyde, And Cylon is only 50 to 60% cinnamaldehyde. I can't say it.
And that's the thing, in large quantities can hurt you.
That's what contains the coumarin, which is the toxic compound. If you look that up, you can find out exactly, you know, how much you should not be taking of that. And I use cinnamon every day in my coffee, and I know I buy the cheap kind. So it's like you would have to take a really large quantity for it to be toxic to you, but you still need to be aware of it and research that. Because what it does is it causes kidney, lungs, and liver damage.
Okay, so that's one remedy for a toothache. You got anything else?
Yes. Oh, for a toothache, yes. So I don't know if you remember, you had a toothache a while back. A few years ago.
Yeah, about a year and a half ago, I had a pretty bad toothache.
And do you remember me telling you to use cloves?
Yes.
Cloves are a natural pain reliever, topically. So you can either get clove oil or whole cloves and ground them up, boil them, soak a cotton ball in it, stick it on, you know, on the tooth in question there, just bite down on it. And it numbs it, so it's kind of like a numbing agent.
And I think we use the ones right out of the little bottle, like the little jar that you get for cooking.
Yeah.
And I think, if I remember correctly, I think what you did was you put them in a little tiny glass bowl that you use for like dips, and you put a little water in it, and you let them soak there for a while.
Yeah. Well, they also sell clove oil, which is really strong, and you can dilute that with olive oil so it's not as harsh on your skin. You can gargle with this if you dilute it in water. You can also mix it into olive oil to make a paste out of it to apply it that way. Cloves is a really good thing to have around. Plus, it's, you know, dried. It lasts forever.
Well, I hope you kept really good notes, because you know I'm going to be taking your notes and I'm going to be buying all this stuff. I'm going to be acquiring it somehow.
I have awesome notes here. I was actually thinking of converting it into a blog and posting it, because there's so much information on here and so many resources linked to it.
Very good idea. You will do that. And to all of our listeners, guys, you can be expecting that.
You're going to hold me accountable to that.
I don't know. I was hoping you were going to say something when I said expecting that.
I'll work on it after we get through recording.
Yeah. Oh. We should also mention to our listeners that we are moving again. We are leaving the state of Kansas.
And we have a guest that's been, we've been trying to get on here for quite a while, and things keep coming up in our life and his life. And
you're talking about the government guy?
He wants to be on the show, and we really, really want him on the show, but now we're moving again, so it's going to be postponed again.
Okay.
But just know we have an awesome guest coming up. Anyway, back to the toothache. So there's also various other things. I'm not going to go into how to use them, but look into it, because black pepper is an amazing thing to have in your cabinet. Cayenne pepper, of course, is a great thing to have that is good for pain relief. Anise oil, A-N-I-S-E. I'm not sure I'm saying that correctly, but I've heard of it a lot. All of these things can be used topically for a toothache. And here's one that is kind of gross, but interesting, a potato. So if you've ever had a tooth abscess, it's pretty gross to have, but it happens. Basically, it's a really bad infection. It's very painful.
I heard that can get into your brain if you don't.
It can get into your bloodstream. Yeah, you got to take it serious. So here's where the potato comes in. You slice off a piece of the raw potato and put it against the abscess, and it draws out the pus. Really, really cool. You obviously want to go to the doctor for that, but that will bring you some relief. Well, here's another unbearable ache that kind of goes along with a toothache, but not really, an earache. You know, a toothache and an earache are unbearable because you can't grab it and hold it and try to, you know, like when you hurt your finger, you grab your finger. You can't do that to your tooth or your ear.
Right, you can't rub it.
An earache was a little bit more difficult to find things to relieve, but colloidal silver, which is also throughout this episode, can relieve an earache with just a few drops in your ear. And it fights the infection if there's an ear infection going on. If it's swimmer's ear now, you got to use alcohol. You got to drop alcohol.
Pull the moisture out.
Yep.
We used to use hydrogen peroxide to get the water out. My mom used to put it droplets into our ears after every time we swam when I was little.
I remember doing that once, and it was so loud, it was ridiculous.
It bubbles. It bubbles and clatters inside your ear. Now, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just telling you what my mom used to do.
I don't know if it's good or not. I don't see why it wouldn't. Here's something else that's a kind of a common trend in the naturalist environment today, the naturalist community. Coconut oil pulling. Have you heard of that? It's used historically in medicine for cleaning your mouth. It's really popular. It's getting popular in the prepper community. Like I said, it's already popular in some of the naturalists.
Okay, how about digestive issues, stomach issues, that sort of thing?
Okay, so activated charcoal is good for digestive issues. It can actually remove toxins from your system because it has such high absorption properties. That's a good one to look into. Pure vanilla extract was used by indigenous people as medicine for years and years, you know, throughout history, is good for digestive issues. And it's also a good prepper item because it lasts forever. Do not get imitation vanilla. For one thing, it's made out of beaver anal glands.
Okay.
For another thing, it's worthless and it doesn't taste as good. Fermented soy sauce is a good prepper item. It also has beneficial bacteria in it for your digestive tract. It's high in salt, but it's still lower than table salt. That was a stomach first. Let's go ahead and talk about lower digestive issues. All right, so I'm just going to throw this in there because it's still part of the digestive system. Diarrhea.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to bring up diarrhea at some point.
Well, shit happens.
Nice. Nice one.
So there's a lot of different things that cause diarrhea. Bacterial infections, food poisoning, even antibiotics can cause diarrhea, and of course, contaminated water. So do you know what pectin is?
No, I don't.
It's a fiber found in fruits. So I'm thinking, I'm going to look into this more, but I'm thinking if you have a food dehydrator, you can dehydrate some apples and stuff like that that have pectin. And that could be something good for a bad bout of diarrhea.
How do you get the pectin out of it?
It just contains pectin. Oh. So if you, you know, eat the foods that have pectin, it's has the good bacteria. It promotes the good bacteria in your gut. Mm-hmm. And it for healthy digestion, it also bulks up your stool and it reduces intestinal inflammation.
Okay.
So I think that would also help with dysentery. And apple cider vinegar is a natural antibiotic. It's cost effective and it's good for diarrhea resulting from bacterial infections. I got a recipe for you.
Okay.
It's called diarrhea tea.
What? Does it taste like diarrhea or is it to help diarrhea?
It's to help diarrhea. And I'll put it
in the blog. I'm not drinking something that tastes like poop.
I'll put it in the blog. I'm not going to explain it right now, but it's basically a mixture of herbs and stuff. And it helps you with your bouts of diarrhea if you have that problem.
The main problem with this is in a survival situation, it can and will dehydrate you. And being dehydrated in a survival situation is probably one of the worst things that can happen to you.
Absolutely.
So take care of yourselves.
You know, if you have babies that when they go through some diarrhea, you have to buy the Pedialyte and stuff like that for hydration. It's equally as important for adults.
That stuff is really good. I wonder if they make that in a powdered form that preppers can store.
They do. Well, it's not specifically Pedialyte, but they do have electrolytes. They do have drinks with electrolytes that you can put in your preps. Maybe we should include that in the next Bug Out Bag episode. So on the other end of that, constipation is another problem that can happen. It's probably, you know, it's not as life-threatening, but it's definitely miserable. And there are some things you can do with that that are natural. Senna, S-E-N-N-A, is a natural herb. There's also, you know, you've seen medicines over the counter. Sennacot, it's made out of senna. It's a plant. Senna leaves are often part of detox teas, if you've ever seen the detox kits you can buy, because they have a powerful laxative effect. You can also make your own tea out of fennel seed, cinnamon, coriander, ginger, and a lot of those ingredients I just listed off prevent cramping. So you have the senna leaf to promote what you need to do, and then you have some other herbs in there to prevent cramping.
Let me give you a pro tip, a pro survival tip here. You know the MREs that they give to military people?
Yes.
Well, it's well known that in those MREs, there is usually a chocolate milk powder to make a chocolate drink. That's just part of the kit. I've heard from several different military guys that say that they use those chocolate powders, they eat them to help with constipation because the foods that are in MREs are usually very high protein and they get you constipated.
I did not know
that. It's to counteract that. They also have the salt packets in there and they take those, even if they're not going to use them on their food, and they eat those because it helps them to retain water for hydration. So, pro tip.
I did not know that. All right, what's next on the list?
I think antibiotics would be probably a part of first aid. Can we do antibiotics?
Yeah. Antibiotics are a good one we need to talk about. If there's no doctors around and you don't have access to prescriptions, then if you store up fish antibiotics in your preps, you'll have something to work with.
Really?
And there's a variety of different kinds. So they have like fish mox, which is amoxicillin.
So you're talking about fish, like if you have pet fish?
Yeah, fish get sick too.
And you can use the antibiotics that help them to help you?
Absolutely.
Wow. I would never have thought of that.
They use these same antibiotics at the veterinary clinic, but you know, you're probably not going to be able, you can't buy those over the counter where you can buy fish antibiotics over the counter.
Right. But in an SHGF situation where the whole world has gone to shit, you can find yourself a veterinarian place and maybe get some of these medicines.
You could, yeah. But you can get them now and put them in your preps. Don't use them until you absolutely have to use them, though. And there's reasons for that. But here's the list. We have fish mox, which is amoxicillin. Fish flex, which is cephalexin. You've probably heard of all these. Fish flox, which is ciprofloxacin.
Mm. Okay.
Fish pen is penicillin. Fish zolmetrin. Yeah, I can't pronounce that one. Fish sin and fish sulfa. So I'm not going to pronounce all those, but did you know fish pen treats syphilis?
Oh, wow. Wow.
So these antibiotics are for, you know, extreme catastrophic conditions where prescriptions are not available. If you don't use these right, the reason I'm throwing this out there is because it is dangerous. Don't go out there and buy these and just start using them. For one thing, if you don't use them right, you could hurt yourself or somebody else if you don't know the right dosages. And you can also build, unintentionally build up an immunity to something if you're not using the right dosages.
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
Well, and this also goes in part with collecting all your information and putting it in binders. So if you're going to be using any of these things, it's a good idea to do research, print these things out, put them in your prepper binder. So this way you know how to use them when a situation comes up. Why try to remember something when you can just open your binder, go to the first aid internal section, and there you got your antibiotics, right?
Yep. And did you know you can get pocket cards off of Amazon? There's antibiotic pocket cards that tell you what they treat and body weight dosages. There's a book, it's called When There Is No Doctor, Preventative and Emergency Healthcare, that also talks about antibiotics. So educate yourself with those, put them in your preps.
I don't have that book. We need to get it.
We do need to get it.
It's a good one. All right. So we talked about most of the first aid internal kind of stuff. I think, is there anything else we can think of top of our head?
I do want to talk about colloidal silver. That's an antibiotic alternative. A lot of people use it right now. You know, it's not SHTF, but a lot of people use it right now.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you right now in the preparedness world, the survival world, colloidal silver is a big deal. Always talked about. It's always mentioned in some sort of way. I know really nothing about it. I just know it's good for you. So how? How is it good for you?
Well, it's documented to be effective against Ebola. That's how good it is. Back in the 20s, apparently the FDA approved it for wound treatment, but later reversed that because it wasn't patentable. So apparently if you can't get a patent, it can't be a drug. Anyway, in 1999, the FDA put a ban on it to be sold as a drug. So now it is considered a dietary supplement by the FDA.
Okay, so it's regulated per dosages and all that, and strengths and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so all that means is it can't be sold to diagnose, treat, or cure or prevent a disease. They won't market it that way, but it can be a dietary supplement, which means it's safe to use according to its instructions. Hospitals use it as a topical treatment right now, especially on burns and stuff like that. Babies, they put it in babies' eyes. Did you know that's what they drop in the baby's eyes when it's born to keep it from getting
STD? I did not know that.
STD.
Wow. No kidding.
Yep. So there's a lot of doctors out there that talk about this. If you've heard of Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, they talk about it. There's a Patriot nurse. She's really good. She talks about it. There's a lot of good research on it. But there is a blue man.
What's a blue man?
Paul Carrison, and I don't know if I pronounced that name right, but he started taking colloidal silver, and he was drinking 10-ounce tumblers of it every day.
Why?
And this was years ago. This was in the 70s. All right. Well, he said when he first started drinking it, he had terrible acid reflux. It was eliminated in 3 days' time. But he kept drinking it every day. After a certain amount of time, he turned blue. His skin is blue. He looks he's blue.
Wow.
It's really strange.
Okay, so I'm looking this up as you were talking, and I see right here it says, what are some side effects of colloidal silver? It says over months to years, this can result in a blue-gray discoloration of your skin, eyes, internal organs, nails, and gums. Doctors call this argyria. It's usually permanent. In rare cases, high doses of colloidal silver can cause serious side effects such as seizures and organ damage.
Yeah, so you want to make sure you follow the directions if you buy that, and don't take it on an ongoing basis.
It's as needed only.
As needed.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy is you should look him up. It's amazing to look at him.
So colloidal silver is an awesome antibacterial supplement. Antibiotic supplement, but it's also very dangerous, so you got to know how to use it.
Let's talk about cold and flu real quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oseloxacin. That's something sold over the counter right now. I can't say that. It's sold as a cold remedy right now, so it helps with the symptoms. Tastes sweet, dissolves under the tongue, doesn't require water or anything. It's something good to keep in your pack. If you start experiencing cold and flu symptoms, it's going to help lessen the symptoms. When I see it in the drugstore, it has that name on it.
Well, people will get it. They'll figure it out. Some people right now are laughing at you going, it's so easy to say that. We just call it OCN. We get it all the time.
Probably. All right. Well, here's some herbs real quick, and then we can move on. Elderflower, yarrow flower, and peppermint tea help with fever. They help increase your perspiration to cool your body down, and that can be made into a tea. Now, did you want to hear about some antivirals? Because not every sickness is a cold bug.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're still talking first aid, internal kind of stuff. I would like to get to external.
This is the last part of internal. So there's some spices that do act as antivirals. They kill viruses or help prevent viruses. Those would be cloves, cinnamon, ginger, black pepper, turmeric, of course. They boost your immunity, but they also have antiviral properties. And garlic is another one. If you can add ginger, pepper, and garlic to everything you eat, you're going to fight off viruses.
I'm a huge fan of turmeric. I've been using it for many, many years. Turmeric is good for inflammation. And you take it with black pepper. Now, the reason why you do this is because they say, it has been proven, that when you take turmeric with black pepper, you increase the performance of the turmeric by over 500%. So I will put turmeric and black pepper on my eggs, on pretty much everything. I've actually made teas out of turmeric.
Pretty much everything Keith eats is orange.
I know. I eat so much of that. I'm surprised I don't have an orange skin, happening. But yeah, I can definitely attest to turmeric. It's outstanding for inflammation. And inflammation is one of those things that pretty much kills everybody. I mean, there's so many different types of issues you can get from inflammation.
Yeah, that's true. And apple cider vinegar is another antiviral I'll throw in there.
Right. So is there anything else within the first aid internal section we can talk about with pain? Just pain in general. Like we could talk about muscle pain, back pain, arthritis, things of that nature.
Yeah. So pain can have so many different sources. You really need to know what the source of the pain is to deal with it. But in general, rosemary is a good one. You can dilute it in a carrier oil. Some of these essential oils, you don't want to use full strength. You want to dilute it. Almond oil is a good carrier oil, or olive oil. You can massage it into your muscles. Feverfew contains compounds that reduce inflammation and muscle spasms. So that's a good one to look into.
Feverfew, that's a product?
Feverfew is a plant.
Oh.
Curcuma, which is the active ingredient in turmeric, of course. And we can both attest to that, how much better we feel when we have that. And you just eat that. In fact, there's a study that shows that curcuma is as effective as ibuprofen for pain management in arthritis when taken over a period of 4 weeks or more. So that was interesting.
Okay, so let's talk about the external or topical remedies in our first aid.
Okay, well, on that same thing that we were just talking about, muscle aches and things like that, capsicum annuum, which is the capsaicin, which is the peppers, like chili peppers, the oil from those, you've probably heard of people using that.
Well, capsaicin is the part of the chemical that's inside of peppers that makes it hot, right?
Yes, and they also use it in topical treatments for pain. So if you've seen the patches that you stick on your skin, things like that, maybe rubs. A lot of times it has capsaicin in it. So you have to be really careful when using it, and don't get it in your eyes for sure. This is also what they use in pepper spray, by the way.
Right. And the plants that have capsaicin in them, they actually have done this over years to protect themselves from predators, from like animals coming in, trying to eat their fruits. So it's kind of like,
you were telling me the plant is protecting itself. Yeah,
absolutely. This is plant self-defense.
Okay.
Is where that comes from. Look it up. I'm telling you, I've watched a lot of Discovery Channel, man. I know about stuff.
Okay. So that's a good one. Colloidal silver again, has been proven to help with different types of pain. One of those is trigeminal neuralgia, which is a pain in your face and the side of your head that's caused by a virus.
What?
Yeah. And it's kind of related or similar to Bell's palsy. Have you ever heard of that?
Say it again?
Trigeminal neuralgia.
Okay. So you need to be careful here because you know that I'm a hypochondriac. And as you say things, I'm like, I have a pain on the side of my head or my face. Do I have hypocalcemia?
Well, this one only happens to pregnant women.
Oh, I'm safe.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, great. Now I'm back to not being safe. Yeah, I'm sitting here freaking out, thinking about all the things that I'm going to have now.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, so that's been proven to help with that specific type of pain. It's caused by a virus.
And what is the remedy for this?
Colloidal silver helps with that particular type of pain. That's all I have for pain.
So colloidal silver, good for pain.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so when we're talking about external topical, I would think of skin. Maybe like, like you get athlete's foot if you don't clean your feet or if you have wet shoes on a lot.
Sure.
Which could happen in an SHGF situation. Things like that.
Definitely. So that's an important one, antifungal. Colloidal silver helps with that again. It actually helps with athlete's foot, ringworms, warts, yeast. And MSRA is very serious. That's a staph infection. And colloidal silver has been proven to help with that.
So staph infections is something.
That's a serious thing.
Yeah, survivalists talk about this because this is something that can kill you, staph infections, if you're out.
If you don't treat it,
yeah,
it's not going to go away on its own.
Right. You know, in an SHGF survival type of situation, many of us might not be as clean as we would like to be. We may not have soaps or cleaning, or we may not be able to take showers every day like we do now. That is possible. If you look at any of these types of TV shows, movies, whatever, about end of the world or SHGF types of situations, people are generally not clean. The problem with that is your skin has bacteria on it. And when you're not clean, more bacteria builds up on your skin. This is why if you get a cut, they say if you get a cut in a survival situation, it can become very serious because your skin has already got the germs on it that can get right directly into the wound.
That's right. And sometimes you can just develop you can develop skin irritation or a fungus from the heat and moisture on your body, which then can turn into sores. So you want to make sure you treat any kind of a rash or anything that you get.
So your body becomes like almost like an incubator.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. Pretty gross.
It is gross. All I know is in an SHGF situation, I'm finding a way to clean myself. I'm taking a shower somewhere. I'm jumping into a lake. I don't care what it is.
Yeah, you gotta get naked once in a while and air things out.
air things out, wash things off, wipe things down, you know, that sort of thing. Hey, it could be fun.
Could be. Okay, so oregano oil is another topical solution. You can dilute that with a carrier oil like olive oil or almond oil, something like that, to apply topically, but you can also make a spray out of it by diluting it. This protects you against bed bugs and fleas and lice and stuff like that too, mosquitoes. But oregano oil is also effective against yeast infections.
Okay.
Cold, flu, and just a host of topical skin conditions.
Okay, so that brings another question. You say yeast infections. Are there anything specific to men or women individually that we could be talking about? Or?
Well, you know what? Jock itch is yeast. Athlete's foot is basically yeast. All that. You can get a rash under your boobs. That's yeast.
That's not fun.
From sweating. No, it's not. It's like jock itch under your boots.
That's terrible.
Anywhere where there's sweat built, you know, moisture and heat.
You know, I have heard of athletes and some people getting skin irritations like under their, in their armpits where their arms rub up against.
Yeah, that's yeast also. Okay. Tea tree oil is another oil that you can use. It's a powerful immune stimulant. It's great for inhaling or like a diffuser in the air. It's also a disinfectant for topical use. And it fights all three categories of infectious organisms, which is bacteria, fungi, and viruses.
Now, isn't tea tree oil also what helps with lice? I believe it is.
Maybe. Yeah, I think so. I think they do put that in like lice shampoo and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It's powerful stuff.
It is powerful and it smells great, but it also penetrates well. So it helps with toenail infections, boils, athlete's foot. Again, do not ingest it because it can be deadly. This is topical only. This whole section's topical only. All right, so that's enough fungus. How about burns, cuts, scrapes, all that kind of skin stuff?
That's the biggie right there, because you are going to burn yourself. You're going to cut yourself, scrapes, all that sort of thing. Imagine if you're walking 20 miles and not used to it. Imagine if you're walking 20 miles and don't have the right shoes. Imagine if you're trying to heat your home and you're using wood and you cut yourself, burns, all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything can happen.
Well, we all have seen the sunburn gel with aloe vera. We probably have, from our childhood, had grandma or mom with aloe vera plants breaking the stalks off and rubbing it on us, right?
Right.
Aloe vera is definitely good for burns.
Excellent. And you can grow aloe vera.
It's the best thing for burns that you can have naturally.
You know, I lived in Florida for a long time when I was young, in my childhood. And we had aloe vera growing. And aloe vera grew there as well, naturally. But we also grew it in pots in our house. And when we got sunburned, because we lived on the ocean, lived on the beach. And we got sunburned, we would just cut a leaf off the aloe plant. My mom had a way of cutting the leaf in half that would preserve the oils inside. And then you just take that leaf and you just rub it right on your skin. It was fresh right from the plant, right onto your skin. And it takes away the pain and helps with the sunburn. It's fantastic.
Amazing plant. Good to have. Colloidal silver is also good in this area because it can hydrate your wound. It doesn't sting. It doesn't stain or anything. You can apply it to minor cuts, scrapes, burns. What it does is it provides optimal healing environment, which means it's guarding against bacteria.
So it lets the body do what it needs to do to heal.
Yes.
Okay.
And it doesn't damage the healthy tissue. So that's a plus.
Okay. And now that's not for really deep type of wounds, right?
No, we have a whole different section about that.
Yeah, gotcha.
So hard liquor, of course, is a good wound cleaner. It's also good for cold medicine.
Alcohol should definitely be part of your preps. And you can also barter with alcohol. That will be a highly sought after item.
That's right. It's good for sterilization, just general cleaning out the wound, even for cold medicine. So look, we've had a hot toddy, right?
Oh, yeah.
It helps with congestion. All distilled spirits like vodka, rum, gin, whiskey, tequila never spoil even after opening repeatedly if they're stored properly.
Okay.
So those are good to have. Honey is ideal as a topical antibiotic.
It is. Now, the stuff that that hardens up on top of the honey, you can scrape that off and use it also as a topical.
The crystallization?
Yeah, the crystallization that forms on top of the honey.
Honey's been used for thousands of years on wounds and burns and other medical stuff too, like acid reflux, cough and cold. You've seen it in products at the store for cough and colds.
And we should probably do a whole episode just on honey.
Well, we did the one episode about foods that last forever. I don't remember the name of the episode, but honey was in there because they found honey in Egyptian tombs that was still good. Yeah, thousands of years old.
Honey's probably one of my top 10 most favorite things on this planet.
Yeah. If it's stored properly, it's going to last a long time. All right, here's one more thing about skin that we haven't talked about yet, and that's insect bites. We kind of brought up mosquitoes and stuff, but tea tree, obviously, is great for insect bites. You remember that stuff called camphophanique?
Sure, yeah.
It's kind of like that. You can dab it on your insect bites.
Now, camphophanique, didn't you used to put that like on poison ivy and stuff like that? Like if you got poison ivy?
Skin irritations. It's made out of camphor, and that's the same thing you can do with tea tree. So tea tree, camphor is natural too, but... if we're stocking up in our bug out bag, tea tree oil, I haven't checked the price of camphophanique lately, but I'm betting tea tree oil can be bought in larger quantities for less money. And it's good for stings, poison ivy, rashes. It's also antifungal, like we just talked about, has multiple uses. Just don't put it full strength on your face. In fact, some people have sensitive skin and may not be able to use it. My daughter has sensitive skin and can't use some of the.
What is it? Does it burn?
Yeah, it can cause like a irritation. Lavender is another antiseptic that reduces the risk of infection, stimulates skin regeneration. So if you have a blister or something like that, or spider bites, scorpion bite, put lavender on it. And you can make a spritzer out of that too by diluting it with water. Well, you know, it even says jellyfish on here, but I thought pee was the only thing that worked on that.
Urine?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things we didn't talk about tonight are snake bites. We talked about stinging insects, scorpions, things like that. But is there anything we can do about snake bites? I know from my own research that I think there's only one, maybe two antivenoms that the everyday average person can actually get their hands on. Otherwise, you have to get a doctor. And you can look that up online. I don't know what they're called or what it is. But is there anything that can be done, you know, topically for a snake bite?
Well, there is. But the thing about snake bites is it's basically, you know, it's based on where you're at. So people in Brazil have different snakes than the people in Australia, right? So the treatments are going to be different. But what I did find that was interesting was that curcuma.
That's from turmeric, right?
That is from turmeric. It's proven to be a potent antivenom against snake bites in Brazil.
Oh,
so
wow.
One more thing that turmeric is good for.
Nice.
Put that on the list.
So that's really all we got for snake bites, but that's good. That's something.
Yeah, well, it's good to know that it's regional, and if you're going to go somewhere where you know there's a lot of snakes, look it up before you go so you can get some tips on how to handle that if it happens.
Get a snake bite kit. Don't you have one?
I do have one.
In your kit, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Excellent.
It's a generic one. It's not specific to any breed.
Mm-hmm. Well, good to know.
All right. So that's all I had for insect bites and skin. We can move on to bleeding.
When we're talking about external first aid, bleeding is, you know, that's how people die. So is there anything we can do about bleeding?
Uncontrolled bleeding is the number one preventable cause of death from trauma.
Preventable cause of death.
Yeah. So when you think about people getting injured in traumatic, you know, injuries, bleeding is the number one cause of death. So you got to know how to stop it or control it. It's very important. But we're going to talk about minor bleeds. You need to know the difference. You need to know when to recognize when, you know, your life is in danger or someone's life is in danger. If you see blood spurting, it won't stop coming out. It's pooling on the ground even, or the clothing is soaked with blood. Bandages are getting soaked repeatedly. Well, obviously, if you lose a limb or a digit.
Yeah. Gunshot wound, knife getting stabbed.
Yeah. Internal bleeding is something to watch out for. If a person seems confused or if they're unconscious and bleeding, all those situations definitely cannot be handled with just some herbs. All right. You need some serious medical attention. All right. Anyway, so you've probably seen boxers in the ring. You've seen their manager or whatever over in the corner putting Vaseline on their face, right?
Yeah.
So Vaseline, petroleum jelly, is a common way to stop minor bleeds. It coats the skin, moisturizes it while it's coating it, and it kind of slows the bleeding down, even stops it if it's not bad. That's the number one that I found. But there's lots of herbs besides just using your Vaseline for that. Cornstarch is really common in the pet community because when you're cutting your dog's toenails, starts bleeding, you're going to throw cornstarch on it. That can work on humans also. If you have a cut that's just a small cut that's not won't stop bleeding, put some cornstarch on it. So it dries it up pretty quick. Flour also works similarly to that, but not quite as good. It dries up the blood and helps it stop bleeding. Sugar actually has antiseptic properties, and because it's crystalline, it absorbs the blood and helps it dry up faster. So these are things, you know, that you can use when you don't have anything else around. Black pepper apparently has been used for ages to stop bleeding. That sounds horrible.
Yeah, how would you use black pepper?
You sprinkle it on the bleeding area, and if you can't take the pain, you can wash it off. But if you can leave the black pepper on there, it's supposed to heal the wound quickly. Now, I have not tried this, but if anybody ever does try it, I'd like to know how bad it hurts.
So what you're trying to tell me is my next major cut from a knife, I'm going to try this.
Oh, we're going to stick it in the black pepper.
Dip it in black pepper. Okay.
All right. Well,
should we put turmeric with it too, just in case?
Turmeric and black pepper work well together.
Okay.
All right. Well, tea bags is a popular thing to stop bleeding, especially with dental work, because you can get a tea bag, steep it in water, and put it in your mouth if you've had a tooth pulled or something like that.
Yeah, teabagging is...
Oh, my God. Did you really just say that? Oh, my God. Anyway, you made me lose my train of thought.
Did I? I had that effect on people.
Teabags work because tea contains something called tannins, which causes blood to clot. So it's not like it's drying it up and working like cornstarch or flour, it's actually promoting a clot.
The tannins do that?
Yes. It's also it helps the blood vessels to constrict. So tea bag is a good thing to use. You can use it on external, you know, not just in your mouth for bleeding gums.
Right.
You can use it externally.
So you got a cut on your, a little small cut on your hand, your arm, whatever. You can just wet a tea bag and then wrap it on your wound.
Yeah. You're supposed to steep it so that the tea, you know, gets mixed with the moisture. But don't put a hot one on a wound. You got to cool it off in the fridge. It's got to be cold so it doesn't, you know, heat is going to cause bleeding. So you want it to be cold. Ground coffee also works because it aids in the clotting process. And apparently that's one of the oldest home remedies to stop bleeding. I've not heard of that, but I think that sounds reasonable.
Well, ground coffee can be used for a lot of things. I did not know it could be used for stopping or clotting blood.
You apply a pinch of ground coffee on your wound. If it's not a deep wound, mind you, let it sit there for about 10 minutes, wash it off, and should be good to go.
Because you don't want to get that ground inside your cut.
That sounds painful.
And you don't want it to heal with them in there either as well. I mean, I would come up with my own ways of getting that coffee to the wound without actually putting the grounds in it. Maybe use some kind of a filter between it.
Yeah, I like a tea bag. All right, well, here's the last one for bleeding. Yarrow. Have you heard of yarrow? It's a plant.
I have, but I don't know what it is.
It's found around the world. It's a plant. And they're actually in the Achillea family, which is said to be named after Achilles, the Trojan war hero.
Yeah.
Who was made famous in the Greek mythology.
I love the movie.
Well, the legend says that Achilles used yarrow to stop bleeding in the wounds of his soldiers during battle.
No kidding.
But this...
Where do they get yarrow from?
It's a plant with small white flowers. You can get yarrow root and yarrow at health food stores. And I found this on numerous sites, so don't let this mythology thing throw you. This is real. I found it on numerous sites. It has healing properties that can treat the wound, but if you crush and grind the leaves and sprinkle it on your cut and cover it with a bandage, it stops the bleeding.
Nice.
And there's also, you know, a lot of people struggle with nosebleeds. So I kind of have a little bit on that if you want it.
I don't get nosebleeds per se. I don't get them that actually bleed, but I do get a bloody nose if I blow my nose a lot. And you know I've got bad sinuses, so I'm always blowing my nose.
Yeah, a lot of people struggle with the dry sinuses causing nosebleeds.
Right.
Do you know what coriander is?
Yeah.
You can use the coriander oil to coat the inside of your nose with a few drops to stop the bleeding. And it's a combination of the oil acting, but it's also the smell of the oil. You can dip a small cotton ball in a half a cup of water that has apple cider vinegar and ice cubes in it, and then apply that cotton ball to both nostrils. I don't know how awful that smells, but it stops the nosebleed. And on that note, if you drink apple cider vinegar every day, like 2 teaspoons a day in your water, it prevents nosebleeds. Apple cider vinegar fixes everything.
Yeah, if you read up on apple cider vinegar, you'll find that it's really, really, it's almost like a superfood.
It is.
It's a very healthy thing for you. The thing is, how do you make apple cider vinegar? Now, I know you can buy it in bottles, which I do, and you can store it. I don't know how long it'll last for. I'll have to check into that. But I wonder how you actually make it. You know, if you're in a long-term SHTF situation, I wonder how you make some of these things.
That's a good question. How to make vinegar. And apple cider vinegar has a lot of good qualities. It's antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal. It's like it's everything. Definitely have to have that around. I need to find out what the shelf life is on that. You know what nettle is?
Nettle,
stinging,
yes.
Stinging nettle?
Mm-hmm.
Bull nettle? There's different kinds of nettle.
I've never heard of bull nettle. I've heard of stinging
nettle.
That's
what we call it in Texas.
Okay.
You can get nettle in a dried powder form, leaves. You can also get extract or juice from nettle leaves. That also works when it applied inside the nostrils to stop nosebleeds. And this nettle is something that you're going to hear a lot in part 2, where we talk about health conditions. So far we've been talking about first aid type stuff. Part 2, we're going to talk about health conditions. So some of the health conditions that we're going to talk about on the next episode are arthritis, sinusitis, allergic rhinitis, respiratory issues, migraines, blood pressure, even blood sugar, Crohn's disease, We're also going to talk about some mood related stuff. Don't miss it.
Are we coming to a close on this episode?
That was all I had here.
My prepper brothers and sisters, this was part one of our Prepper Apothecary and Herbal Medicinals and Remedies show. So stay tuned for next week's show, which is going to be part two, where we talk about health conditions and herbs and herbal remedies to manage those conditions. Stay prepped, stay happy. Thanks for listening, and good night.